Welcome to a podcast brought to you by the American Academy of Orthopedic Manual Physical Therapists. Our academy is a national organization committed to excellence in orthopedic manual physical therapy practice, education, and research. And we're here to explore a wide range of topics with you through interviews with content experts.
Hello and welcome. I'm Rebecca Catlin, one of your co-hosts of the American Academy of Orthopedic Manual Physical Therapy podcast. And today our special guest is Dr. Christina Kuka. Before I introduce her to you, let me give you a bit about her background. Dr. Kuka is an assistant professor at A.T. Still University. She practiced in outpatient orthopedics for over 18 years after graduating with a master's in physical therapy from Regis University in Denver, Colorado. She received her doctorate in physical therapy through the Ole Grimsby Institute in 2006, prior to earning the designation of Certified Orthopedic Manual Therapist through the North American Institute of Manual Therapy. She completed her fellowship through NIOP and her Doctor of Science in Physical Therapy through Andrews University in Bering Springs, Michigan. Additionally, she completed 3 certifications from specific schools for treating scoliosis, the SCROF method, the Barcelona Scoliosis Physical Therapy School, and the Scientific Exercise Approach to Scoliosis. She is a board-certified orthopedic clinical specialist and a member of the American Physical Therapy Association and the American Academy of Orthopedic Manual Physical Therapy. Dr. Kuka, thanks for taking the time to join us on the American Academy podcast. We have you discussing your article, Spinal Manipulation After Multiple Fusions in an Adult with Scoliosis, a case report. If you would, just give us the general premise of the article and why this was novel or unique case.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having me on here today, Rebecca, and to talk about the case report. A little bit of the history of this case report is it was a 25-year-old female who presented with left-sided spasms that she said she had mostly when she was breathing. And so this actually started 3 weeks prior after trail running. And in her history, she divulged that even she had another incident 6 months prior to that. Now, initially, she was referred to me under the premise of this is a scoliosis patient. And so with her history, she has had 2 spinal fusions. So one at the age of 12, and that was an anterior approach that fused levels T6 to T12, and then a second surgery at age 15, which was a posterior approach, which fused levels T2 to T8. So that made this case a little bit more unique in the sense of it was not just a scoliosis patient that I was treating because of her extensive history of fusions, but her history led a little bit more down the mechanical path after going through a differential diagnosis. She had been cleared by her physician. She had had x-rays to make sure that there were no problems with the hardware. Then by going through the examination process, really finding those mechanical issues around that structure of the hardware from the scoliosis surgeries.
Okay. Do you know why she ended up having a second fusion at the age of 15? Was it pain or function or cosmetic?
I believe, so usually when they look at the progression factors for scoliosis, what they're looking for is a progression of about 5 degrees in between x-rays. So I believe what had happened, she had her initial x-rays, or she had her initial fusion done at the age of 12, and then that did not necessarily stop the progression. So in order for the surgeries to be considered successful, there needs to be that halt in the progression factor. So that led to the second surgery 3 years later because she started to progress again.
Okay, great. Thanks. So she's effectively now fused from T2 to T12.
Correct.
You mentioned some of her basic complaints. You have a great table in the article of her complaints. Can you give us her subjective complaints in a nutshell as well as the corresponding objective findings?
Sure. Subjectively, she came in because she was a very active individual. And so she was no longer able to participate in CrossFit. She was a yoga instructor. She had to stop that activity as well as running. And she could not sit or stand for longer than an hour without pain with breathing. And so what she noticed was for instance, with running, she wasn't able to run because there was too much pain and then spasm in that left rib cage area as she started some of these higher level activities. So that's initially what brought her in. As far as some of the examination findings, what was really interesting, she had this left skin fold posteriorly low below the level of the fusion. So that showed up even more when I took her into a functional squat. And if we look at her doing CrossFit, so I had her do a demonstration of what she did with CrossFit and her squat there, then that hinge point got worse. So we tried to get her out of that. This was at a later stage, but we worked on some of that. As far as the other examination findings, then she had hypomobility and pain reproduction with a rib spring to the left rib 4. She had pain and hypomobility at the right L2-3 and right L5-S1, as well as hypomobility at the left hip into at end range of flexion. That was also seen with her functional squat as well.
Okay. And she had actually had this pain a few months prior, 6 months prior, and she'd been treated. Tell us about what her previous treatment was.
So her previous treatment, she had 3 injections around the thoracic spine, as well as opioid treatment. So that was one of my initial concerns, was that this had happened 6 months prior, and now we're having another incident. There was a mechanism of injury. I believe 6 months prior, it was a kayaking injury, in a sense of that's what irritated the tissue. And this time it was trail running. So that led to a conversation with the physician as far as making sure that the hardware was intact, that that wasn't the beginning of some disruption of the hardware, since at 25, the initial hardware had been intact then for 13 years, followed by 10 years for that second surgery. So that was one of the primary concerns going in, was if there was any hardware issue. But after the x-rays and in speaking with the physician, that was cleared as well.
And those facet injections did help for 6 months, correct?
They did.
So after you did your objective evaluation, tell us about the considerations that you had. You already mentioned the imaging and just clearing her with the physician. What were some of the other relative contraindications that you considered and how you proceeded to decide that she was an appropriate candidate for manipulative therapy?
So I think some of the considerations was after clearing, making sure the hardware was safe. I mean, I went through your normal differential diagnosis list, like no history, familial history of cancer. She was not having any other systemic presentation that would lead me to believe there were other systems involved. I did do abdominal percussion as well, just to make sure it wasn't a referral pain, for instance, from the liver or spleen. Not that her history led to that, but I just wanted to make sure to clear those systems to make sure that the mechanical diagnosis was accurate. And other contraindications were, I think, anytime that you have the hardware or the fusion, clearly you cannot perform any manual techniques specific to that area. So just making sure to stay away and respect that area, and then assessing the areas around the fusion is what led me down that path. Clearly not being able to go through any of the few segments or even assess them for mobility.
And then ultimately, what was your manual treatment for this woman?
The manual treatment for the first visit focused on, I actually went straight for the rib because that is what reproduced her primary complaint. So I did a rib 4 manipulation in a supine position, which resulted in about a 0 to 1 out of pain after performing that with breathing. So that initial treatment really reduced a lot of her pain. And then even into that second treatment, I did treat the rib again because it was still hypomobile. She was not getting the spasms that second week, but she had a little bit of that restriction still. So I did manipulate it again. In that first visit, I also did some mobilizations, some grade 2-3 oscillation mobilizations to L2-3. I chose 2-3 mobilizations at that level because it was close enough to the fusion that I didn't necessarily feel comfortable on that first visit manipulating that segment. So that was visit 1. Again, visit 2, addressing the left fourth rib. And then that's when I was a little bit more aggressive in the sense of manipulating the right L5-S1, which that pain she had commented in her initial examination, that was an older pain. So she had had that previously. So that responded really well to a modified manipulation that was blocking the L5 and then manipulating from below. So manipulating the S1 segment under L5.
Okay. After you'd done some oscillatory techniques to the upper lumbar L2 and 3, did that inhibitory input affect the mobility at all? Or was it a true capsular stiffness in the upper lumbar?
That was more a true capsular stiffness. So that was, I believe, more inhibitory.
After you did the L5-S1 manipulation, did she have immediate improvement in her lower lumbar symptoms at that point?
She did. So that was demonstrated both through pain reports as well as range of motion testing and even ease of doing some decreased pain with the squat.
Okay, that's great. So in the rib area, she went from a 7 or 8 out of 10 pain to a 1 out of 10 pain after the...
Mm-hmm.
And then lower lumbar, she wasn't quite as painful to begin with, but she dropped still several points on the pain scale to a 1 or 2 also.
Yes.
That's good. Nice return on investment for, we're up to 2 visits now.
And even looking at, because I believe, looking at that within treatment session, that change in within that treatment session was really a positive predictor, mm-hmm. that she would respond positively to the manual techniques.
Okay. In addition to the manual treatment, was she provided any home program or motor training specifically?
Yes. So on that first treatment, then I started her on physiologic scoliosis specific exercises. So I have trainings in 3 of the different schools, and that was really important as far as addressing the scoliosis component, because even though she's had this fusion, she still has some of the deformity and some of the muscle imbalance from the scoliosis. And so that was important to get her started with some of the foundational exercises geared towards and more specific to her scoliosis pattern. So that was a little bit more postural training. The reason that the rib manipulation was really important is many of the scoliosis specific exercises rely on working on the patient's breathing pattern. And so that was a really important step and able to get her to allow her to be more successful with the scoliosis specific exercises, as well as being pain-free. And that would also contribute to some of the motor programming and facilitation of retraining that breathing pattern as well.
Okay, excellent. I'm just curious, since she's a runner, did you have any specific breathing progressions related to running or where she has increased respiration rate?
That we would have done in a progression further on, because I'd had her try to stay away from running initially for the first few weeks. I told her not to. We engaged in going into other activities, such as she did some kayaking and lower level activities, but some of the exercises do increase as far as some of the resistance. There are different techniques to use. I did not necessarily incorporate the change in rate as far as the respiratory rate going into a quicker or faster respiratory rate at that time. There was one technique that I did use that helps with the respiratory reserve as far as decreasing the exhalation, increasing the inhalation. And so that the whole intent is to expand the lung capacity overall.
Okay. The woman had a total of 8 visits. What was happening for visits 3 through 8? Can you give us a little timeline on what her progressions and treatment were and how she responded?
Yes, absolutely. So I think what is interesting, really after the first 2 treatments, she was much better on the pain scale, on the function scale. She was more confident in getting back to some of her activities. And so treatments really, and if you look at it, it was actually treatment 3 through 7, because treatment eight was that final wrap up, kind of a discussion, any last questions, but she came in with cervical pain. So I treated that. And that was really her 8th treatment. So back to treatments 3 through 7, that was really just looking at some of her function. So she was a CrossFitter. And so wanted to get back to that. And that was the point where we looked at the squat, and I actually took a picture of her back to show her the difference in standing versus at the bottom of the squat, and having the conversation really of what does this look like when this is loaded with weight now, and help guiding some of her decision-making from that point. She was also a yoga instructor. So then we went through some of the yoga poses and how she could change her body to make that better for her curve, as well as safer for her mechanics as well, in order for her to continue to teach yoga. Did run into some scapular mobilizations that we did on treatment 4, as far as just helping to facilitate that mobility a little bit more. And really a lot of it was her trying out an activity and coming back and seeing how that went in order to see if we could continue to progress, and then also guide some of her current activities that she wanted to get back to make them safe and effective for her. And also, for instance, with the conversation with CrossFit, you know, looking at it through the lens of, is this something that you really want to continue to do for your back?
Yeah, those are great things for her to consider. So she's young and healthy at 25, but even 10, 15, 20 years down the road, she really has to consider, for lack of a better term, wear and tear she wants to put through her spine.
Right. And the impact on that, you know, Park has a great article about adjacent segment disease after lumbar fusion. And so this was through the lens of just a lumbar fusion, right? And so what does that look like? And he talks about even a longer lever. And if you think about that long lever of T2 to T12, and now the shear forces that will be going through those vertebrae below, and even there's research being done at the above segments. But if we think about the weight distribution and the forces at that lower level, then I think it's really something that we need to introduce to our patients, because I know I've seen videos of, you know, many of these scoliosis patients that have been fused and they're getting back to their golf games, and these are multi-level fusions, which, you know, it's that cost benefit ratio of getting them back to the sports that they want to do. But then what does this look like further down the line? And that's, I think we can have an educated guess based on adjacent segment disease and the impact where that goes, but to what extent, we just don't know.
Mm-hmm. And I would agree this is a important conversation to have with patients who have these types of features that we can't change. She's going to be fused from T7 to T12 forever. But also, how did you actually handle that conversation with her, understanding the concepts of creating illness in patients by creating fear avoidance, using words that create fear in their mind, and wanting to stay away from having her be afraid to be active and creating those behaviors associated with chronic pain, versus getting her to understand some wise choices and activity modification?
For sure. So that conversation really, and that was a little bit of the intent of having some of those treatments, to make so that she was comfortable and had all of her questions answered. Because I feel, especially in the scoliosis population in particular, they just don't get a lot of the answers that our typical ortho population does. So I felt that was really important to serve in that role of being able to answer a lot of those questions going on. And I'm lucky in the sense that this was a young, motivated woman who was actually a PT tech. So she was familiar with the PT realm. And so I think just being direct with her as well and showing her the evidence in a sense of her back and just saying, this is what it looks like straight, if you notice this area, and this is what it looks like when you go into that squat, and letting her extrapolate asking her what that looks like now with increased load, and letting her make that deduction mm-hmm. a little bit. So I more so guided her towards that. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's her choice to participate or not. But this is what it looks like just with, even without a load, but also reinforcing and giving her confidence in being really positive as far as the exercises are looking great. Everything looks really good when, you know, as you're getting into these positions, and this might help guide you along that way to get into those positions and keep things a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah, that's a great example of one, having therapeutic alliance, and then understanding the personality of your patient and how to handle different conversations based on the person in front of you. All right. So you had done several outcome measures before and after. Can you tell us about those?
Sure. I think the ones that people probably aren't as familiar with will highlight. And so that is the Trunk Appearance Perception Scale, or the TAPS. And what that is three different pictures. There are actually four on the sheet, but three are specific to gender, so whether male or female. And what that is the patient actually looks at the picture and identifies with the picture where they think is reflected as far as their appearance. And it's ranked 0 to 5, and a higher number is less, they perceive less deformity, whereas a lower number, they perceive more deformity. So that's actually really reflective in how they are viewing their bodies. The nice thing with the TAPS, or the Trunk Appearance Perception Scale, is it aligns nicely with the scale of the SRS-22. So the second outcome measure that people may not be as familiar with that's specific to the scoliosis population is the SRS-22, and that is the Scoliosis Research Society 22, which is a questionnaire that looks at five different areas. And again, the scoring for that is a 0. The lower the number reflects more disability or impairment for that patient, whereas a higher reflects less disability or impairment. So in her initial outcomes, at her initial examination, she was an 85 out of 100 for the SRS-22 versus a 96 out of 100 after the treatment. So that reflected a minimal important difference.
She also did an oswestry and then the spirometry measurements. Why do you think that the oswestry didn't change?
I think that's a great question as far as the oswestry not changing. And my thought with that is, if you look at her scores being 8%, that is minimal dysfunction. So I think that her being younger and in a more athletic population overall, that maybe the oswestry did not capture some of that because she was so active usually in her day-to-day activity. So that was one thing that I was a little bit surprised, especially when comparing to the SRS-22, some of the different realms that it captures. That is a good question. As far as spirometry not changing, they've actually found with some of the surgeries that spirometry is not necessarily expected to change. And in many cases, it actually decreases, particularly when someone has had an anterior approach for the fusion, because you think about all of the tissues that they have to go to, then sometimes that scar tissue will limit any improvements in the spirometry readings.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with the oswestry assessment. It usually captures pretty basic level ADL function. So if you have someone who's impaired on higher level activities, it just doesn't really capture that as well. You mentioned in the article that she continued to have some limitations in prolonged sitting with driving at more than 3 hours. So it's possible one of her questions she answered lower was ability to travel or prolonged sitting.
And that was an interesting one, because that was that old pain that had been there for quite some time. And so I think that might have been, could that have been pieced out a little bit more, and hopefully that would get stronger or less painful as she continued with the exercises.
So you had done manual therapy on multiple areas, including hip, L5-S1, summit, the upper lumbar, 2-3, and then the upper ribs. Well, this is a great case related to regional interdependence. For fun, can you give us a bit of a traditional biomechanical explanation as to how those pieces fit together? The cascade of events of how one affects the other?
Yes, absolutely. I love biomechanics. So if you think about that rigid spine, okay, so now we have that hypomobility, then the increased stress, again, as I spoke about before, that adjacent segment disease at the lumbar spine. So you have that going on, but now you add in some limitation at that left hip. Okay, so now that lumbar spine, especially in particular that L5-S1, is stuck in between the spinal fusion spanning to T12, a decreased mobility of that left hip as far as that inferior glide. So between those two hypomobilities, that hypermobility and that increased shearing effect at that area in the right low back, so right L5-S1, that I think caused increased stress, which will add to some of that complexity there. And then similarly at the thoracic spine, now going back to that hypomobility of that rigid hardware in the thoracic spine and that increased mobility of the rib, which then questionably then does it get stuck in that certain position because it is moving a little bit too much, but then getting it in essence back on track to be able to move in its normal path of motion.
Mm-hmm. So you made it very clear in the article that your manipulations were for very specific impairments versus just inhibitory. So that's a great example of how manipulation can be used in some cases, pain inhibition. But for this case, it was very specific to impairment in her mobility. Is there any other features of this case that we haven't discussed that you would want to make us aware of?
Part of the reasoning to do the case, I think, was, you know, even the literature will not say that segmental manipulation is superior to regional manipulation. And although I feel like that's true in a lot of our patients, then clearly this is a case. And I feel like there are probably many more out there where sometimes our patients may be better served with that specific manipulation. For instance, with anytime you have any hardware in there, but also even in consideration of our hypermobile patients, because many times if you manipulate everything through those hypermobile patients, then sometimes I wonder if that can aggravate other things. So being a little bit more specific, I think can benefit that population because it is found loosely a link between hypermobility and the scoliosis population as well. And then also I think just the joining of manual therapy and the scoliosis schools. You know, my expectation when I first saw this patient really was, this is a scoliosis patient. I will be doing my normal scoliosis regime of taking her through more that Schroth scoliosis specific exercise program, but then adding the layer of spinal fusion, then really having to take a step back and looking at our scoliosis patients as having mechanical issues too, because I think what happens as soon as we see the diagnosis of scoliosis, and a lot of times our patients will do this too. Oh, I have back pain because I have scoliosis. Well, yes, but not necessarily in the sense of there are mechanical issues that can happen around that scoliosis, especially I think of our adult population that has that hardware. Then I feel as if they're a little bit more prone to have some mechanical issues around those fusions.
Right. And that just highlights the whole concept of individualized treatment and doing a thorough assessment so you can understand exactly what each patient presents with versus treating a general diagnosis. So I appreciate the thoroughness of the case and the attention to detail related to her specific impairments. So this young lady, have you happened to have a chance to follow up with her or at least talk to her since you discharged her from therapy?
This was, 3 years ago. And we did keep in contact for quite a while, and she was doing great. She was back to all of her activities. I do believe she did cut out CrossFit for a while. And I'm not sure at this point if she did go back to it, but since then she had resumed her yoga teacher training and instructing there, running, and a lot of those higher level activities, and even weight training because she was active in the gym as well.
What do you think is her prognosis long term?
Oh, that's a good question. I think with each fusion probably adds a little bit of that level of complexity and some of the soft tissue considerations and even scar tissue adhesions, even internally there. So I think, you know, it's always hard to extrapolate that, but I think that she is knowing her, she was a very motivated individual. And I do believe after this incident of even gaining a little bit more education about her body and her scoliosis and how she can work with her body, that given that she stays on the path of maintaining some of the strength and the exercises, I think that she'll have a good chance to limit any further incidents. But that being said, life happens too. And so, you know, we have accidents and tweak things every day. And that's why I think some of those mechanical issues around the area can be a challenge for us, especially when we see someone, oh, with a spinal fusion, you think of that right away. As far as the adjacent segment disease, there's not enough literature even out there to see what that looks like. You know, we don't know the long-term effects of these segments, especially when we have these longer fusions. So I would anticipate that's going to continue to degenerate. And, you know, we know that even in just a regular lumbar fusion, then going to the next level. So in another 10 years is another surgery a possibility? That could very well be a possibility, especially since she is only 25 and those fusions right now are, what, 10 and 13 years old at the time of this case report.
Well, hopefully for this young lady, her level of activity, the fact that she probably has a reasonable strength base, given that she is active, will act in her favor.
And I think that's one really important, just generally speaking for all of our patients, is that strength component, you know, as far as maintaining that strength with aging. What I've seen in not only the scoliosis population, but, you know, just my regular outpatient population is that is so important just for maintenance, for prevention.
Yeah, I would agree. What I usually tell patients is we do the manual therapy in the room to get you ready to exercise and get strong. The magic really happens out in the gym. That's where you really make the meaningful changes and gains that will help with prevention and maintenance of function. Great. Is there any other projects or cool things that you're working on at this point? Any other research or activities that you're participating in professionally?
Right now, I'm transitioning to academics. Mm-hmm. So I am in the process of starting to take my first group of students through their research project. And so that will be kind of the focus in the near future. But there are a lot of opportunities, I feel like, even from this case report of next steps of where I want to go, even just looking at what these patients with fusions or multiple fusions, where they go, because we don't have a lot of long-term outcomes on them. And partly I wonder if that's because how often do we see our spinal fusion patients in the clinic? You know, I've been practicing for 17 years and this is about the third one that I've seen. I remember, you know, my first year I had one woman with Harrington rods. And then in the last couple of years, when I did more of my scoliosis training, then I had two more. So I think that this population is probably very much underserved and could benefit a lot from PT. So just kind of initially setting the stage and foundation of where do these people end up? And, you know, I have a guess of where they go, but, you know, what that looks like, and then taking that back to physicians and maybe educating them on maybe directing them to PT for some of the PT services. I think that could be a great step for some of the research. And then even developing a postoperative protocol for this population, because really what's lacking in the literature, looking for literature as far as even rehabilitation from a typical spinal fusion, there's not a lot out there. And especially in particular with, now put it through the lens of a multi-level full back fusion, then there really isn't a lot of guidance out there other than the surgeon's training.
Mm-hmm. That would be fantastic. I would agree that surgeons don't really seem to find it necessary to send people to physical therapy post. Most of mine would have been related to lumbar surgeries. Even with lumbar fusions and surgeries, most of the post-op cases I get are because the patient themselves self-refers because they want the therapy post versus coming from the physician. And we know that from other lumbar literature with basic back injuries that muscles don't necessarily just spontaneously turn back on and motor patterns spontaneously return to normal. So just deducing from that, there certainly seems, in my opinion, the need for rehabilitation post-surgery could really benefit patients to maintain their prognosis long-term. Well, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciated our conversation and what you're bringing to the table professionally and dissecting your clinical problem solving and treatment plan on a single case.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
This has been a production of the American Academy of Orthopedic Manual Physical Therapists. You can learn more about the Academy by visiting our website at aaompt.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by searching for our acronym, AAOMPT.